Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It is now the 11th of March and we're back in Dublin after all the excitement and Seamsa August sun is over in the west in Cosla, Connemara. Under the spell of spring sunlight, where would you get it? It's a cup on tay for the soul, that's what it is. You can chat to us today and then we're back in Studio 7 in the usual way on the WhatsApp, that's 087 032 32 32 and on email it's oliver@rte.ie. By the way, as we were thanking people in Galway, in Castle and Connemara, I want to say also thanks to the lovely people in Ennis who hosted a merry couple of days celebrating books as well the other day in the town over the weekend. And Ennis in County Clare is a place with a bit of flair at the moment. The pedestrianised main street and there's a buzz from the old Ground Hotel to the Glore Theatre where they have a spectacular brand new library named after De Valera, now would you believe? Still a king. In Ennis, I was looking up, it was meant to cost 9 million, usual story, but it ended up at 17 million, but sure. Maria, says you over there. It does look gorgeous and sits nicely among all the historic beauty of the town as we drank in all the fun. And a big shout out as well to that Galway Book Club that I met there and to everyone else who gave us tips for the trip up from Clare towards Connemara and going by the lovely towns, the lovely settlements of Quilty and Milltown, Malbane, Liscannor, all looking beautiful. Corkscrew Hill. Do you know that if you've ever done that hill around West Clare, Corkscrew Hill up, meandering towards Ballyvaughan as you're coming into the Burren up in north end of Clare. All looks spectacular on Sunday. It's just beautiful weather. The sun sets later, as you know, in the west. And you really spot it this time of the year. And if you're lucky enough to live over there and you get to watch the sky melting into those honey and rhubarb colours all the way in through spring, then sure, you know, we're jealous of you. So that's what you want to hear, basically, isn't it? By the way, went to the Cliffs of Moher and perfect conditions on Sunday. Absolutely no wind. Lovely and quiet. I met a fellow called Joe who told me he was working there 18 years now. And he was there even before that big centre was built into the hill where it melds so quickly into the landscape, or so beautifully into the landscape. And he says they get about 12,000 visitors at the height of summer a day. 12,000 of them. And the Americans are already starting to arrive this week. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the paths are closed due to recent tragedies there. But it's kind of incredible. They're plagued with visitors who just ignore all the signage. And even though there's plywood kind of barriers put up and everything, people are climbing over them, over the warning signs and hiking up the walkways, which are undergoing the safety audit. But not notwithstanding, the staff there doing an incredible job and trying to do everything they can. All they can do is advise people. He gave us a good tip, though, Dwayne. Joe said this week now the tourism season is up and running massively and it's going to be mad busy this weekend, obviously St. Patrick's weekend. But St. Patrick's Day itself, he says, if it's a lovely day, he said it'll be tumbleweed. It'll be really quiet. So it'll be a perfect day if you get the right conditions to go to the cliffs and look down upon the beauty of the stunning big giants, which look kind of silent one minute and then you can hear the waves crashing in the distance. There's something special about it. And it is one of those kind of tourist places that lots of Irish people have gone to, isn't it? The Irish people are the only ones who complain about the car park prices. The tourists are absolutely besotted and blown away by what they see. And there's really good accessibility as well because they bring golf buggies up and down for people who can't make the journey by foot to the site and looking down. Beautiful part of the world. Now, speaking of these spring things, by the way, I'll tell you what's happening in our show this morning. Sure, I don't obviously settle back into business this morning. We're going to be chatting to Brendan Grace's daughter, Amanda. And obviously we'll be talking about what it was like growing up with Brendan himself as a dad, but we want to talk to Amanda as well about her own struggles, which she thankfully overcame, which is why she's able to come in and talk to us today. But it's a story about how sometimes people who seem to be so lucky and so happy in their lives from the outside are, you know, silently suffering on the inside. So we'll talk to Amanda Grace later on about this, and it's an interesting story, and it's one you're going to be enthralled by, no doubt about it. Now, yes, I said I was going to talk about spring things because it's a great story. It's actually one I merely missed. Yes, it was in the Examiner, but it's courtesy of Michelle McKeown, who's an environmental geographer in UCC, and she writes in environmental matters in the Examiner, and she's talking about the crows. Why are the crows so noisy on early spring mornings? She says, across Ireland, you will hear the crows turning up the volume, filling the morning air with a chorus of caws and croaks. What can only be described as an avian shouting match, loud, chaotic, and either an impressive natural spectacle or a nuisance if they're waking you up and you're upset about the whole thing. But the reason is basically a mix of love, territory battles, family squabbles and food fights, all unfolding in the trees above our heads. And it's quite an Irish story. I think the crows are really one of us when you get through this. Basically, it's if they're having a territory battle, family squabbles and roaring, shouting, it's basically a winning streak audience. Do you remember that? Crows have a reputation for being very clever. It's well deserved. Scientists have marvelled at their intelligence. Some cases rivals that of even the primates. They use tools. They can solve puzzles. The crows can recognise human faces, and they even understand abstract concepts like numbers. So you might think inside the house the crows are quiet, and you step outside and they all start going mad as they're chatting to each other. Look at what he's doing now. Look at these ridiculous humans. Spring is in the air. The crows enter a period of intense social activity, and the most pressing matter on their agenda is finding a mate, of course. Unlike many birds that flit from one partner to another, the crows are largely monogamous, forming lifelong bonds. But first they have to impress each other. And that's what we're hearing. We're hearing this elaborate displays of courtship. Males are basically roaring and shouting out to potential mates, showing off their intelligence and strength by roaring, basically. That's a sign of being sharp and clever. A good mate isn't just about looks. Female crows want a partner who can help build a solid nest, defend the territory and secure food. And that means bellowing at full volume from the highest branch. So be it. Now, there's also a bit of territorial disputes. The rival crows shout at each other to stake their claim on a particular place. So they are looking for the highest spot on the strongest trees. So they love the kind of sycamore trees in particular. Aerial chases, mid-air scuffles add to the spectacle. And it's kind of real estate welfare, according to Michelle McKeown. Just more feathers, fewer legal contracts. Basically, the crows are acting out John B. Keane plays in the sky, land feuds and so on, constantly going. Young crows often spend their first winter sticking close to their parents. They learn survival skills, benefit from the protection of the family group. But by the springtime, the message is clear. It's time to move out. And the parent crows start acting aggressively against the younger crows to force them to move along. But of course, there's a housing crisis for the crows as much as the people on the ground. So that's why they're all squawking and roaring at each other. It's not uncommon to see a murder of crows, to use the beautiful collective noun, bickering over scraps and their calls escalating in pitch and urgency as they argue over a meal. And this is why we should love the crows, because they are basically a tidy towns committee as well, because they clean up the place, they feed on carrion, reduce waste, they control pests by eating insects and rodents, and in their habit of storing up food, they plant the seeds that help forests regenerate. So despite the ominous portrayal they have in literature and film and so on, they are helpers rather than signs of something bad on the horizon. So if the noise is getting on your wick, just be comfortable. As Michelle says, take comfort in the fact that this seasonal soundscape won't last forever, because once the territories are settled, the mates are chosen and the youngsters have reluctantly left home, things will quieten down for a while. So appreciate the drama, because the crows are just like us. They are a winning streak audience. They are the sound of a housing crisis, a John B. Keane play and a Tidy Towns comedy all happening at the same time. There you go. I love the crows. Are just wonderful creatures. And also all the little sticks that they drop in your yard when they're building, you can use that to light the fire. Very handy. They're clever at that too. Now, while Micheál Martin gets to grips with Mr. Trump in America, we are all now allowed to get obsessed with Canada and their leadership over there, because an Irish Canadian, as you've heard by now, is the boss, Mark Carney. The Irish Independent tells us, yes, it's by Mayo. So forget Joe Biden, as everybody has, unfortunately. Three of Mark Carney's grandparents hail from Mayo. He's the new Prime Minister of Canada, momentarily anyway, because he doesn't have a seat in the Parliament, and he will probably, it doesn't stop him being Prime Minister, but he will probably have elections very soon. And there are also all other interesting stories. Well, he has held Irish citizenship, first of all, since the 1980s. And through his wife, he holds UK citizenship, because he was the Governor of the Bank of England there for a time. But he is in the process of renouncing his Irish and British citizenship, because he believes the leader of a country should hold just one nationality. So that's what he's going to do. Does that mean he's Canadian? Can you hold three? Is that possible? But more importantly, Harry McGee tells us this morning in the Irish Times that the three of the Canadian Prime Minister-elect's grandparents are from Ireland. But also more importantly, he basically saved Ireland billions in the time of the crash. It sounds like just giving Michael Noonan a hand to do his job at the time. A former Irish ambassador to Canada recalled how Mark Carney suggested the alternative to the infamous 25 billion euro Anglo-Irish bank promissory notes, which were agreed with the Troika, and were going to squeeze the hell out of us. So we're going to they cost the state at the time 3 billion a year. Mark Carney suggested they could be replaced with long-term government bonds. You could pay them over 25 to 40 years, lower interest rates, and it won't squeeze you so much. And Mr. Noonan, basically, Michael Noonan, who was Minister of Finance at the time, said that that Mark Carney had essentially made a back-of-the-envelope calculation when he met him to show how it could be done. He was said to have taken out a notebook and pen from his bag, sketched out the idea in two sentences. When Michael Noonan submitted this alternative repayment scheme to the European Central Bank, it was initially opposed. Well, his original plan was opposed, should we say. And then the Mark Carney suggestion basically was eventually accepted by the German Bundesbank, which abstained in the vote and went through, and that's how we ended up with this long-term deal. What would you need all those people in the Department of Finance when just the Minister for Finance bumps into someone and says, we have a terrible problem here now with all this money, and he says, ah yeah, here, here's a little bit, scrolls out a thing, and that's the thing the whole country goes with? Okay. Admirable. But he apparently says that his Irish citizenship means an awful lot to him. He's also from a staunchly Catholic background, so he is very like Joe Biden, a Catholic Irish lad in charge of a North American country. Staunchly, he counted the late Irish Attorney General and World Trade Organization Director General Peter Sutherland as an important early mentor, since we learned a lot. When asked about his Irish heritage in an interview in 2021, he said it's a big part of who I am. And he was also UN envoy on climate change. He's done a lot of stuff. He is 59 years of age and they like him. The Canadians seem to like the cut of his jib at the minute because of his real world experience in banking. The sort of things like Goldman Sachs and banking that would put put people off from here. But in Canada, given what's happening in the world at the moment, he looks like a steady a choice compared to the Conservative leader, who is only 45, which we think was attractive, and a lifer in politics. But they've had enough of these young liberal upstarts worldwide, it seems, because the Conservatives in Canada were leading the Justin Trudeau, now the Mark Carney party, the Liberals, by 20%, 20 percentage points at one point, because Justin Trudeau was so monumentally unpopular. But even just by him stepping aside, falling on the sword, the gap narrowed to 10 points and it's narrowing further. So he'll be in the honeymoon period, Mark Carney. That's why they think he'll jump for an election, which isn't due till October. But he will do that because at the moment, I read here in the Telegraph, he can't even take part in parliamentary debates or votes because he has not won a seat in the election. So I presume they'll find a safe seat for him. And Mark Carney, he won the leadership of the Liberal Party, which is why he is now the PM of Canada. That's what's going on there. What's happening south of him? Obviously, Canada's main thing will be facing off with President Trump and all of the headlines across the American media this morning. Wall Street fears that Trump will wreck the soft landing. That's the Wall Street Journal. The Economy's pilot has a new message. Fasten your seatbelts. And they're basically saying he's telling us everything. In everything that he's doing, he's not kidding around. Recession fears cause US stocks to lose their luster. That was yesterday, all day yesterday in the American stock market, the Dow Jones. Will there be a Trump recession? The Trump slump, they're calling it in America as well. Every single newspaper. Is the United States headed towards a recession? Goldman Sachs and other economists forecasting a dramatic fall in forecasting the American growth this year. And already this morning, I'm seeing here, I'm just looking at now, stocks are falling in Asia over Trump's tariff concerns. Stock markets, which fell sharply in the US, are now being followed up by falls in the stock market in Asia, which just opened, obviously, this morning. And this is all a reaction, obviously, to the uncertainty about these tariffs from Donald Trump and the fact that he's kind of announced them, threatens them, pulls back, then announces them again and then pairs some of them back already. Last week, the 25% duties on imports from Canada and Mexico, which are the two biggest trading partners, of course. And then he pared some of those plans so they don't affect certain goods. And the uncertainty is obviously causing massive shocks. Tech stocks in particular are falling. Apple went down nearly 5%. Nvidia was down 5% as well. They make all the chips for AI, artificial intelligence. Tesla fell 15% in the single afternoon. And tech stocks had a historically strong performance over the last 5 years. And they are starting to roll back, fall to lose a lot of that ground, basically, but they're not going to starve, as we say. So that is all the news. And obviously, when you have recession and a Trump slump as the headline, consumer confidence is knocked as well and people will start spending. Although I was reading a remarkable figure yesterday that said in terms of the consumer spending in America, it is led by 10% of the wealthiest people account for half of all the spending, which is kind of extraordinary. The luxury goods and the cost of things and so on. And one of those luxury goods is now a tickets to plays in Broadway, which of course is the New York heart of the theatre world. And people are needing to pay up to $1,000 to watch some of the plays starring Hollywood figures like Jake Gyllenhaal and Denzel Washington. Denzel is playing Othello at the moment on Broadway. It's going to be a very short run. It's costing $1,000 per ticket. Not resale or anything. These are directly with the theatre, which is quite extraordinary. And you'll be sitting quite a few rows back. If you go a few rows back, you might get an $800 per seat. Glengarry Glen Ross is back up and running as well on Broadway, starring the Oscar-winning actor Kieran Culkin. That'll be $720. And if you go near the back, it'll be $500. If you want to see George Clooney in Good Night and Good Luck, the movie, now a Broadway play, $800 a ticket there. And veteran Broadway critic Richard Friedman says it should be $250 tops for an orchestra seat. No more expensive than that. And he says these are direct costs. It's absolutely crazy, particularly because they're plays, no singing and dancing, no massive ensemble cast. But it's working for them because Othello made $2.6 million in 1 week this month, is what they took into the box office, because the stars are so expensive, I presume would be one of the reasons. And since you're out in the gardens, the Dermot Gavin of Britain, Alan Titchmarsh, well, he's older than Dermot Gavin, but he appears every now and again, particularly in the Tory press, telling people that they're doing everything wrong. And avocados pop up every now and again, so you can judge yourself now if you're enjoying your avocado. That if you want to save the planet, basically skip it, have a bowl of Weetabix, cornflakes, whatever you're doing. Alan Titchmarsh says most avocados sold in Britain and Ireland are grown where the rainforests have been felled at an alarming rate. They're then shipped 5,000 miles across the ocean, and there's a lot to be said for your cornflakes, Weetabix and Shreddies. So stay away from the avocados, is what he's telling us, because that's where they come from. Of course, they'll fall foul of the tariffs as well, so it'll be too expensive. And maybe that'll President Trump will inadvertently save the rainforests through no fault or effort of his own. Right, 51551 is the text as well. Oh, it's 20 past now. We better get on with business. I've been listening to this on the road a fair bit and I thought you'd enjoy it. Good morning.